Well, there are those things that the watchers out there should be watching but aren't watching, but we're going to watch what the watchers aren't watching. Let's connect some things together. I'm John Leffler. The program is Steel on Steel.
Steel on Steel. News, commentary, interview, and debate. An alternative information source for politics, religion, and global events. Now, here's the host of Steel on Steel, John Leffler.
Here we are in the beginning of January, plowing into the depths of winter. I'm seeing more and more people off in the ditch. Remember, uphill on snow and ice, speed is your friend. Downhill on snow and ice, speed is your enemy. And if you get onto ice, for Pete's sake, stay off the brakes. How's that? Hi, everybody. I know. That's what the holiday does to you. But anyway, hi, everybody. Welcome to Steel on Steel. News, commentary, interview, information, and debate, much of which you will not hear elsewhere. And our goal and pledge for the last 31 plus years has been to be an early warning service to connect what to many people are seemingly unrelated dots in economics, politics, and religion, and project those seemingly unrelated trends and then show you how these dots and trends are coming together just beyond the horizon where normally the herd doesn't see it. The herd's almost always looking in the rearview mirror. Today, with consensus thinking and the way the media are, you're seeing narratives that are being spun. They're spinning narratives, not reporting news. And they do that by reporting some facts, not reporting others, reporting some stories, not reporting others, twisting things to fit the narratives that ordinarily shouldn't fit the narrative. And since all of that's true, and we are an early warning service and an antidote to that for the last 31 plus years, please do remember that your failure to be informed is not make me a wacko. It's really true. It's much to my disgust, but I guess if they were doing their jobs, we wouldn't have one here. And that's what we've tried to do. The focus of the program is truth with a capital V, veritas. And that is what is lacking today in the world, is this passion for truth and finding things out. Even we discover the fact checkers aren't really fact checking, but in reality, just rendering their opinion as one of many opinions in an area that's maybe of concern, and thereby censoring people who may have something better to say than they do. That's what we're faced with right now. It's become a crazy little world, but please do not despair of looking for the truth. You and I need to find solid reference points philosophically, religiously, and in all other areas of our lives, and use those reference points to guide us regardless of what everybody else is saying. Because as I've always said on the program, the herd is almost always running in the wrong direction. And today, with the educational system pumping out the concept of consensus-driven groupthink, where nobody should offend anybody else unless I'm offended, then I can offend you. I mean, it's just crazy. It's nutso. So it is time we string things together here on the program, which is what I delight in doing, considering that most of the news has been pretty boring. I wanted to show you some important trends so you recognize them as a cohesive whole rather than just isolated incidents when you hear about them either on the news or elsewhere. So to start this little thread trend, where do we go? Well, let's go over to Great Britain. And something that actually happened at the beginning of December, what I've been doing is compiling stories as the holiday season progressed, knowing that we would return and need to begin talking about things other than just chasing the news. Earlier this month, Jewish teenagers who were celebrating Hanukkah faced anti-Semitic harassment after a group of men performed Nazi salutes and chased their bus. Now, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has described the video showing this as being disturbing, but what is actually causing the furor more than actually just the incident, because up until now, it's been easy to try to cloak the rising anti-Semitism in Great Britain as being anti-Israelism or just criticizing Israel as a country, and that is combined with a tremendously large amount of Islamic immigration into various European Union, or in this case, former European Union countries. There was a BBC News report that said racial slurs about Muslims could be heard inside the bus. Why would they say that? I mean, so far, this allegation has been criticized by various British organizations, the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, the Board of Deputies of British Jews. Writing in the Jewish Chronicle, Marie van der Zyl, the president of the Board of Deputies, called for the BBC to publicly apologize to the victims of the Oxford Street attack. That's where it happened. Investigations of recordings of what could be heard from in the bus, rather than an anti-Muslim slur being uttered, as the BBC had claimed, the words in Hebrew in question, I'm just going to translate it rather than reading the Hebrew, says, "Call somebody, it's urgent." Why? Well, because this crowd was forming around this bus full of Jewish teenagers celebrating Hanukkah. Why would the BBC put in this line about the allegation of racial slurs about Muslims could be heard inside the bus? You know, our media in the West are just full of these allegations that later on turn out to be false, but of course never get walked back, and or they take on a life of their own. And even if they do get walked back, a lot of people don't remember that. Well, let's look at how the media view things, and then we're going to draw the line across where all of this is passing right now in this terrific culture war to see whether or not freedom is really going to survive in the West. Because the very people who are decrying the death of democracy are the ones who were actually causing it, which is a known staple of all Marxist activity. Always accuse others of what it is you yourself are doing. Okay, remember the narrative. You have groups of people who are oppressors, and then you have groups of people who are oppressed. The oppressors cannot help themselves. They have to be oppressors. And the oppressed, they can't do anything wrong, even when they're racist, bigots, violent, doesn't make any difference. They can't do anything wrong. That's the basic narrative here that has to be maintained for this dialectical division that we see going on in society as a deliberate move to divide people, thereby creating the turmoil that is needed to achieve this radical transformation of which they seem to be so frequently speaking. So why would they talk about the racial slurs? Well, you have Jews inside the bus. Now, Jews are part of that class that are oppressors when it comes to Jews and Israel, because this line is frequently drawn in the press and elsewhere in Europe. It's what's causing a good part of the anti-Semitic resurgence that we are seeing going on right now in Europe. Three sources, remember. Number one, the old traditional anti-Semitism that's now rising to the foreground. It never went away after World War II and the Holocaust. It just went underground. The second is the nouveau left, the neo-Marxist cultural left, who themselves have always been rabidly anti-Semitic. Then the third group, of course, is Islam. Those communities that are now forming separate societies within European society who hate Israel and hate Jews in general. And as much as people try to divide these two things apart, they can't do it. It's very clear that there's a blurred line and this washes over on both sides. Okay, the reason they would put in an allegation like that is in order to maintain the narrative, they have to have some kind of a provocation or moral equivalence here. Why the Jewish teenagers can't be totally innocent. They have to be guilty. They had to have provoked this before this group of men outside of the bus are making Nazi salutes and chasing their bus. So there has to be some kind of an allegation that the victims were somehow responsible for the crime that was enacted against them. This is that part, that three-stage plan. Number one, if it fits the narrative, well, you just pound it right into the ground. Number two, if it doesn't quite fit the narrative, twist it until it fits the narrative, and then pound it into the ground. Then if it doesn't fit either of those two categories, either ignore it or condemn it or criticize it and reverse it, blame it for being the cause rather than the cause, which is really truly the cause. And that's what they're doing here. So how does this spread out then if we come back to the United States and see what's going on? There is a line, if you take some time, which I did during the holidays and post-holiday season, to go through some of the far-left press and even the mainline media, and they're trying to draw a line that goes something like this. Conservative equals radical equals white supremacist equals evangelical equals violent danger to democracy. Sidebar to equal, evangelicals support Israel, oppressor country, and Jews. Bad. That's the line that is being sown. The first thing that came to mind when I saw this story and trying to track how you detect whether the media is giving you a report or whether or not they're giving you a narrative is to see how well they treat varying stories and what kind of standard they apply. If it's a double standard on the surface, remember, there's a different single standard underneath. Let me give you an example. Remember the old case of the shooting of Trayvon Martin done by George Zimmerman? Trayvon Martin being black and Zimmerman being an Hispanic of Cuban origin. Well, there was a problem here because technically Hispanics have been referred to as a minority group that theoretically vote Democrat, although what you're discovering now, especially in California's Central Valley and other parts where Hispanics have moved in, become a major part of society, and are now becoming prosperous, they're becoming very conservative too, because they're seeing the nonsense that's being cut loose in California, and they want no part of it. But the problem was is that George Zimmerman was Hispanic, technically a minority, and according to the minority rules, remember, minorities are always oppressed, whites are always oppressors, they had to do something about that. So the media began to refer to George Zimmerman as a white Hispanic of Cuban origin. So the word white had to go in there to flip the narrative. There's that twist. But if you're reading right now the publications, you'll see here's one that these come from Salon Magazine. Was Trump just the warm-up act? Canadian scholar warns of right-wing dictatorship. Canadian scholar of violent conflict says U.S. flashing with warning signals. Democracy could collapse by 2025. This does, by the way, sound very much like the warnings over anthropogenic global warming. An article that came out at the end of October in Salon, how extremist Christian theology is driving the right-wing assault on democracy. The Texas abortion law is one step toward the true goal of Christian dominionism, destroying democratic government. Now, you have to think about this for a second. Because even going back to the Tea Party movement back in the early 2000s, the move of the people in the Tea Party have been saying, wait a minute, stop. We need to get back to the Constitution. We need to get back to the founders' ideas of limited government. We want the rights of everybody to be respected, not just of designated small groups that get certain rights and everybody else doesn't get them. We want to go back to the Constitution. So since it's the Constitution that maintains this so-called democracy, why would those who are upholding it be the ones who are endangering it? This doesn't make any sense. And so this is the flippage of words that we're seeing all the time. It always makes you very, very angry because you realize that words are being weaponized and flipped in their meaning, which is what God addressed when he said, woe unto those who call evil good, dark light, and who play with language, because it creates this massive confusion that we're seeing today. And also another extension of the line, when they're drawing the line that goes conservative, evangelical, white supremacist, insurrection at the nation's capital. They have to keep that idea of an insurrection up, that the inclination is too violent. Now, they're also recognizing, as part of this article, that what they're calling reactionary, which is a very good word because that's what Marxists call people who finally stand up and say, no, 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 no. We know where you're dragging this and we're not going to go there. So they're correct in the reactionary idea, but they're afraid of that violence, which is why for many, many years they've been going after weapons. The reason that our founders, even in the words of George Washington, gave us the right to bear arms is so that government could never get that powerful that it could violate the rights of people again. That it would be as well armed, the populace, as anything that the government could muster. It's why the left has been going after these for years and years and years. It's the very thing that leftists always do. Because they're really aware of the fact that all of the claims for transforming society, for global governance, which originally was called the New World Order, then it was global governance, then it became the liberal world order, and now it's being called the Great Reset. All of these pushes to a globalized form of socialism are now endangered, and that's why President Trump was such a glitch in the works, at least to a certain degree, for this whole plan, and why the media just absolutely came apart. But what else gives us a hint of where we might be going? Let's take the case of current law professor Jason Kilbourn. He is at University of Illinois in Chicago. And as part of a course that he did on civil procedure, he was talking about discrimination. So here's what was written. Employer's lawyer traveled to meet the manager who stated that she quit her job at employer after she attended a meeting in which other managers expressed their anger at plaintiff, calling her a N-word and a B-word, and vowed to get rid of her. Okay, now he's just using an example, and he just used the word blank, blank, blank to give the idea.
Well, some people decried this as being offensive. It's the old thing about making them feel unsafe and do this and that. And therefore, now the professor is going to be required, we'll see how far this case goes, he's supposed to prepare a well-written self-reflection paper in response to specific prompts. He must work one-on-one with an instructional advisor who has earned a certificate in diversity and inclusion from Cornell University. He would be forbidden from teaching while taking the course, but that is not punitive action, according to the school lawyer's spin. They note that faculty, administrators, and executives routinely engage in these programs as a means of continuing their education and broadening their skill set. This is hogwash. He's being penalized for being politically incorrect. You know what these resemble? I don't know if you know this or not. This looks exactly like the struggle sessions that were imposed upon college professors, school teachers during Mao's Red Guard Revolution in communist China. People who have been through that revolution are warning us today that what you're seeing with Antifa, with political correctness, are all part of this great drive to achieve a revolution. The language is the same. The verbiage is the same. It's just amazing when you see it. In the January edition of New English Review, Anne Christine Hoff, we're trying to get her on the program here, did something really interesting. She took a statement by President Biden about the COVID vaccine. We all know the legitimate, valid critiques of the vaccine. First of all, it's not really a vaccine because it does not keep you from getting COVID. All it does is reduce the intensity of the disease, giving your body's immune system the chance to kick in so that you reject it before it has a chance to do terrible damage to your lungs and cause fatality or permanent effects. That's all it does. It does not prevent you from getting it. And here's the big part. It does not prevent you from spreading it, which is where the lie has been occurred. You know, if we just all take this vaccine, we'll all be safe. And yet governments are running around in a frenzy trying to get everybody vaccinated. It's not a bad move to do that, but when they step over the line, the same mouths that have been yelling, my body, my choice, for decades suddenly reverse themselves. When President Trump was in office, when he was talking about vaccines, what was the left yelling? We're not going to take these vaccines. We won't do blah. As soon as President Biden comes in, flip, everybody needs to take these vaccines. Dr. Fauci will tell us that the science is settled, but it turns out that it's not settled because he's contradicted himself a number of times. And he says, well, the science is evolving. Wait a minute. We're being told that the science about anthropogenic global warming, aka climate change, is also settled. Is science ever really settled? And the answer is no, it truly isn't. And so what they will tell you in the science classes is you go down the hall to the political classes, they'll tell you it can be settled, where in science, the first thing you learn is that things are only a level of confidence, etc. This is the kind of flippage that we're seeing in the media, and the whole goal is to maintain this divisive narrative, even at the same time they're calling their opponents the one who are dividing. But let me give you an example of narratives that are just really haunting parallels. What she did is she took parts of the president's release, which came out in September of this year, in which he blamed the unvaccinated people for the pandemic. Now, remember, if you're vaccinated, it doesn't keep you from getting it. It doesn't keep you from spreading it. But he blamed people on that. So what she did is she took out the words unvaccinated and vaccinated and substituted for unvaccinated the word Jew. And for vaccinated, the word Aryan. Let's go with the words. This is a pandemic of the Jew, unvaccinated. We're going to protect the Aryan, vaccinated, from the Jew, unvaccinated. The Jews, unvaccinated, overcrowd our hospitals, are overrunning the emergency rooms and intensive care units, leaving no room for someone with a heart attack or pancreatitis. Well, he said pancreatitis, and it's pancreatitis or cancer. Then, speaking to the Jews, unvaccinated, we've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us. So please do the right thing, but just don't take it from me. Listen to the voices of Jews, unvaccinated, who are lying in hospital beds taking their final breath saying, if only I had gotten Aryanized, vaccinated, if only. Now, a lot of this language, you can even take right back to speeches of Goebbels and Hitler. You recognize the language. So the war is on to force people to conform, to force people to think in politically correct ways. And if you don't think in those ways, oh my gosh, this looks so much like the Red Guard in Mao's China and what happened during that whole tragic episode in China's history. It was worse than the Marxists coming to power. It resembles the brown shirts running through the streets, attacking people who didn't support the Nazi Party. You're seeing the inroads being made in evangelicalism. Why? Because evangelicals have been upholding the Constitution, upholding the rule of law. Everybody should do it. The standard of law should apply equally to everybody, not separate for different groups. But also, because of the support against anti-Semitism and in favor of Israel, this is a major problem for this new red-green alliance that we're seeing of the neo-Marxists in the West and the radical Islamists. This has got to go. And so the attack is coming now with inside of the evangelical churches as well, evangelical seminaries, to try to erode it from the inside. So the first thing that you want to watch in terms of media is the idea of, are they consistent when it comes to anthropogenic global warming? The science is settled when it comes to the vaccine. Well, it flips and it flops based on which way the political winds are blowing. Are Hispanics always oppressed, or are they sometimes oppressors? It depends on what's going on. Even Larry Elder, who himself was black, running for governor of California, was called the black face of white supremacism. Do you hear the twisted thinking that is going on among these people? And we see it in the tragic political results, all the way from the violence in inner cities that we have to the mess that California is today. The problem is the people supporting that worldview, big tech has now become the big business that is co-aligned with government, and there is big oil too, and there's big pharma, admitted that. But these forces are all aligning together to promote politically correct narratives and to punish those who don't go along. What's the antidote to that? Well, believe it or not, Ann Christine Hoff in her article, Unshakable False Beliefs, says, you know, the various signs that are crudely spray-painted on plywood going across the country that reject the politically correct narrative. That's the same thing as Vaclav Havel's essay that I've talked about a lot here on the show, The Power of the Powerless, in that when people begin to speak out against it, it means the beginning of the end, because people are refusing to kowtow to what's going on, which is why the viciousness of the fight against it. And why is it we aren't dealing with things in a logical and coherent fashion? Well, recall that in the school systems, we began teaching people to think in group collective sense rather than in a logical independent sense. Individualism, bad. That's what they were taught for several decades in the schools. Collectivism, good. Capitalism, bad. Socialism, good. This type of thing. And so because of that, because people think in group consensus, those people who are in the consensus are afraid to speak out. They are taught to always avoid offending people. Look at what Professor Kilbourn is going through at the University of Illinois, Chicago, as a result of being politically incorrect. Or for that matter, Professor Jason Hill from DePaul University. As soon as you speak out, any amount of viciousness is tolerant, because in the name of tolerance, we're going to be hideously intolerant. That's how groupthink works. That's how it worked with the Hitler Youth. That's how it worked with Mao's Red Guard. That's how it's working with Antifa. There is no difference between any of these groups. And we're in this spot. And as a result of being in this spot, because of the inability of many people to think outside of groupthink envelopes, the issue is not truth or error, fact or non-fact. Those are all tossed around just to support the narratives, which largely are being defended by cliches and group categorizations. And by the way, if you're talking with people that are susceptible to this, as long as you can shatter their ideas about your association with the group, the target group that they're associating, they have nothing further to say because they don't know what to do after that. But that's why it's all debated as cliche. Well, I've got some questions about anthropogenic global warming. You're a climate denier, and therefore equal, this is the implication, to a denier of the Holocaust, and therefore a bad person who was a danger to the planet. Notice that in there, you did not get your question answered. All you got was a cliche and an abuse thrown in your face, which, by the way, the Bible tells us is the mark of a fool. Proverb tells us if you correct a wise man, he says thank you. If you correct a fool, you incur abuse. That's why we are where we are. That's the lines I've managed to draw over the holiday season when I had nothing better to do after eating far too many cookies and other sweet things. And on behalf of producer Steve Schiller, I'm John Loeffler. We're at steelonsteel.com. The program is Steel on Steel. Well, if you hadn't noticed lately, the price of gasoline is rising at the pumps. The chief driver of this, at least to start with, was the reversal of Mr. Trump's policies by Mr. Biden. And immediately, the global price of gas went up as far as energy. It is also combining with inflationary pressures due to incredible amounts of creation of currency. Those two things are rising upwards together. I want to see what they're planning for us now that the COP26, I've been calling it the Cop Out 26 conference, took place in the UK on global warming. All of this has always been, ever since the UNCED conference in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, all about wealth transfer, taxes, and credits. Has little to do with the environment or stopping global warming, which was originally global warming, then it became climate change. Now it's climate crisis. That's what we're hearing about. Tagging into that is climate justice, which seems to be a remake of social justice. So let's see what's up. Alex Newman is joining us now, senior editor back with us from the New American Magazine and founder and CEO of Liberty Sentinel, which is a small media and information consulting firm, also executive editor of the newly formed Red Pill University. We'll talk about your book in a little while. All right, the COP summit. It seems like the Western world is promising to hose itself while other countries won't be required to do it. China isn't going to be required to do much, and it's the leading producer of CO2. So where do we go from there? What is on the docket to make these dreams of fighting climate change real?
Well, there's a lot going on. They just got done with the COP26 over in Glasgow, and it's a continuation of what's been going on. I'll note for the record, John, you forgot global cooling. Back in the 1970s and even into the 80s, they were warning about global cooling. And one of the things that I think is so fascinating about that is the cause of alleged man-made global cooling was also carbon dioxide emissions. And you're probably not surprised to know that the solution to alleged man-made global cooling was just exactly the same as the solution to alleged man-made global warming, and then later the solution to alleged man-made climate change. And that is much less freedom for you. Give us much more of your money. Continue centralizing power at the national and then the international level, and make energy prices drastically more expensive. And they also threw in some other dingbat ideas. You know, in Time magazine, they talked about how they wanted to cover the Arctic ice cap with black soot so it would all melt, things like this. And I'm absolutely serious. They said climate scientists thought this would be a good idea. But their plan essentially remains unchanged. But there's an added twist to it that has become very, very apparent to me in going to these climate meetings over the last decade. I've been at most of them. I didn't go this year because I wouldn't take their experimental injection. But they are essentially causing the price of energy to rise here. And the intended, and yes, I said intended consequence of this is to ship what's left of our productive capacity, of our manufacturing, of our job base over to communist China. Because under the system that they've created now, it's basically the Paris Agreement is the framework. The United States government has promised to impose regulations and executive decrees, executive orders, everything they can to destroy and bankrupt our energy producers, to drive the cost of energy through the roof. Meanwhile, the communist Chinese dictatorship, which is pretending it believes this global warming madness, is saying, look, maybe in 10 or 15 years, we'll possibly think about putting a stop to our ongoing construction program where we're putting a new coal-fired power plant online about once a week. So it's a fraud. The solution to this alleged fraud is to basically shut down the U.S. economy and ship it all to China. And that should tell you everything you need to know.
So how much of this is wrapped up in A, the infrastructure bill, or B, build back bankrupt, which is what we're doing now? And I'm wondering how they're going to actually pull this off, Alex, given the staggering inflation. You know, if we use the methodology of what they used to determine inflation back when Ben Bernanke was chairman of the Federal Reserve, we'd be at about 14 or 15%. Now, you and I both know they're jiggering the figures to hit some target numbers, not to tell us the truth, but to make it look like everything's A-OK. And they don't count into it now housing, food, energy, or healthcare. So if you don't need those things, there ain't no inflation.
Yeah, as long as you can eat your communist Chinese-made TV and your communist Chinese-made electronic garbage, then you're in really good shape, right? Inflation is not that big a deal. But honestly, I think all of this is being engineered, John. I think the inflation goes right along with it. I think what we are witnessing right now, and the climate scam and the inflation are both critical parts of that, is the controlled demolition of the U.S. economy. And to their credit, they've been pretty honest about what they're doing now for decades. All you had to do was know where to look and pay attention and be able to read through the globalists speak. But they talk regularly about building what they call a multipolar world order, where we'll have multiple power centers rather than just the United States as the sole superpower in what they call a unipolar world order. And so it's always been clear that to bring about this dream that they have, this vision of this one world system, they frequently in public call it a new world order, you're going to have to, first of all, knock America down quite a few notches, bring other countries up at least a little bit, and also discredit the ideas that America was founded upon. God-given rights, like limited government, like individual liberties protected by law that is beyond the reach of a democratic majority or anything else. They had to discredit these ideas. And so in the controlled demolition of the U.S. economy that we are, I think, just now starting to get a handle on, we're witnessing all of those things converging in one place. So I think going forward here, what we're going to see is an incredibly toxic brew of higher and much higher prices. And, you know, almost always inflation is purely a monetary phenomenon. It's just they're printing a lot of money and that's what's causing prices to go up. And that historically has almost always been the case. But there's an added twist this time. So, yes, we have the money printing going like crazy. And then we have two other factors that are integral to this whole operation. One is the actual pressures on the supply of goods. They're, like I said, causing our energy prices to skyrocket by deliberately limiting supply. So they're deliberately engineering shortages in all these different areas. They're deliberately demolishing the supply chain. And so, of course, that has inflationary pressure on prices. And then the other thing is, you know, for the first time in world history with fiat currencies and only time, you have the U.S. dollar serving as what's called the global reserve. And so there's a built-in global demand for U.S. dollars all around the world, because since we were taken off the gold standard back in the early 1970s, the petrodollar, so-called, has been essential to be able to settle international transactions, to be able to buy and sell oil on international markets and things. Well, those days are quickly coming to a close. And so on the one hand, you have the supply of dollars massively expanding with the printing from the Federal Reserve, a private cartel of banks. On the other side of the equation, you are going to have, I think, a very rapid collapse in the international demand for dollars. Because as we speak, John, governments are saying, hey, we don't need dollars to do business. India and Russia just made an announcement, hey, we'll just settle transactions in rubles and in rupees, right? We have no reason to use the dollar for this. So as this trend accelerates, we're going to see a flood of U.S. dollars coming back into the country. We're going to see drying up of demand for U.S. dollars. And then you combine that with the crazy money printing and the supply chain disruptions, it's going to be a very, very turbulent time for the U.S. economy, to the point where, you know, I tell people you ought to take sensible precautions. You know, here in Florida, we're used to hurricanes coming around. We usually are told by our government to have a couple weeks of supplies and stuff like that. I think those are the terms we need to be thinking in right now, without sounding alarmist, but recognizing that these forces are at work. And right now, I don't see how you can stop them without catastrophe.
Yeah, that's as you were talking there, when you watch these parallel tracks is what's going on, that most people are oblivious. Oh, here's a dangling preposition of. You do get this profound impression. You can look at the inflationary cycle. You can look at what we're doing with energy. You can look at the offshoring of more jobs. We're shutting things down. Look at how draconian Europe's becoming over the oh my gosh version of the of the COVID virus. But what people, as you just pointed out, don't understand is these tracks are running together, and it all comes together at some point in a great big little cataclysm. I don't see any other way of doing it. And again, not to generate panic, but like, yeah, well, here we go. Doesn't anybody see this coming?
Yeah. And I think, honestly, if you don't see this coming yet, it's simply because you're not paying attention, or you got a really bad education in school and you weren't taught the basics about how to understand current events and how to analyze news, how to look at different sources of information and evidence and determine whether they're trustworthy, and then combine all this together using logic, using reason to come up with a coherent picture. Because at this point, the handwriting is on the wall, to use a biblical metaphor. I mean, it's baked into the cake, right? They have created so much new currency. It is mind-blowing. I mean, we're talking trillions and trillions and trillions of new dollars that are now going to be chasing a vastly reduced number of goods and services. A drastically smaller pie is now being represented by drastically more dollars. And so if you have U.S. dollars saved up in your savings account or under your mattress or sitting in your safe or in your safety deposit box and you think, oh, I'm safe from all this chaos, you're really not paying attention. What's happening here is an orchestrated looting of the American people, of the American economy, and it is going to become more apparent. And I told people years ago, and I know you did as well, John, that all this money printing was going to be manifested in drastically higher prices. And nobody wanted to listen. Well, here we are now. And, you know, I hate to say I told you so, but now everybody realizes that this is what's going on. So don't be caught off guard when phase two of this comes into play. Take some sensible precautions. There are even very smart people who are going to profit off of what's happening, but you need to be paying attention. And very few people are paying attention to the climate scam. You know, there's already that big segment of Americans that just don't pay attention to anything. You know, they're more interested in the football games or getting the six pack or whatever. Then you have the segment of Americans who are still deceived by the fake media. Then you have the segment of Americans who are aware, who are paying attention, and who recognize that the climate scam is a fraud. But even they're not paying attention to this because other things are such a higher priority. We've got the COVID totalitarianism. We're trying to beat back these experimental injections they want to stab into all of us. You know, we've got all these crises going on at the same time. Nobody's paying attention to what's happening on the climate front. But I'll tell you, you know, people can go read my articles at The New American about the COP26. They are moving full speed ahead on this, and it is going to have the effect of a massive boost for the power, the prestige, the economic prowess, and of course, ultimately, the military of communist China. And it's going to have just the opposite effect on America. It's going to be catastrophic for our economy, for our senior citizens, people who are on fixed incomes, people who are saving their money in dollars, people who depend on jobs, right? And most of us still need jobs to make a living. Most of us still have to go to work. So all of these things are going to be extremely serious. And, you know, it's being justified with this blatantly fraudulent hypothesis that carbon dioxide, literally the gas we exhale, is some sort of pollution that's harming the planet. It's simply ludicrous. And yet all these things are like a gorilla screaming in the room that nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah, it's important to point out how the politically correct narratives now are stifling dissent all the way from medicine. I mean, there are leading epidemiologists who are talking about the censorship of perfectly reasonable questions about the COVID vaccine. And the social media, the mainline media, they're all chopping these questions off. And it goes all the way through the sciences and everywhere else. So that's the problem. By the way, you said, and I hate to say it, I told you so. I don't hate to say that.
Well, you know, honestly, John, I wish we were wrong. I wish that I could go back and look back at the last 10 years of my career in journalism and say, oh, man, I'm so sorry, guys. I was totally out to lunch. I got it all wrong. You can all get back to your football games. There's nothing to be concerned about. But unfortunately, you know, we look back and say, man, I wish more people had listened because maybe we wouldn't be in this mess at this point.
But at least if you talk the way you're talking, as things unraveled, it won't be as panicky to people who understand what is happening. Because you pointed out something very, very important. And that is the average person out there is busy with the football games and their jobs. And if they're in their 30s or 40s or 20s, they're raising their families and yada, yada, yada. And even as John Maynard Keynes said, they don't understand the hidden mechanism of inflation, that it's a hidden tax, that you've been taxed but like crazy. But there does come a time when the bill has to be paid. And then somebody hands them a bill and they go, well, gee, what's this for? Holy crud!
Right. Yeah, and that bill is coming due very quickly, and it's going to be very painful to try to pay it back. The amount of debt now, depending on whose estimates you use, the U.S. government's got something like $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities. And so even a lot of the people who right now feel very comfortable, feel very insulated from all this, hey, I've got a high-paying job, you know, my job's in a critical sector, regardless of whether COVID or stock market decline, none of that's going to affect my job. Folks, you need to be paying close attention here. This is going to affect everybody at some point. And I think it's going to be especially devastating to people in the United States, where we've become accustomed to a very high standard of living, relatively easy going situation. We can export a lot of our inflation. We can import a bunch of junk from other countries because we've got this U.S. dollar serving as the global reserve currency. Well, I suspect those days are coming to a close, and they may come to a close very quickly. And it's going to be a serious time of readjustment for a lot of people.
You know, the one thing I see out of all of this, too, is this starts to wreak havoc at the polls because people tend to vote their incomes, their taxes, all of that stuff.
Yep. And, you know, that would bode well for the political future. The only problem is they're working right now overtime to try to legalize 30 to 40 million illegal immigrants to get them voting by the next election. We know they've got many of their frauds now are entrenched. They haven't quite been able to nationalize the election system yet, but they are trying desperately. And we know that especially in a lot of the blue states, New York, California, Illinois, we know voter fraud is absolutely rampant. And so I think, honestly, that's part of the reason that so many of these politicians have this hubris, this pride. They act like they're invincible. They'll spit in the face of their constituents and not even think twice about it. They're thinking, hey, you know, if we need, we'll just manufacture a bunch of additional fake votes. So it's hard to overstate the enormity of the crisis that we find ourselves in right now in the United States. I'm generally an optimistic person. And over the very long term, I couldn't be possibly more optimistic. But I think over the short and medium term, there's certainly going to be some very serious discomfort for a lot of people.
Right. And that's what brings about the change. The question is whether or not the people have the adequate information that they need to make the right decisions. Because, you know, when panic sets in, look at what we've seen already, some of the nonsensical panic going on regarding how the virus has been handled, you know, families separating out. Well, you're not vaccinated, you can't come here, and all of that, even though we know that even if they were vaccinated, it doesn't prevent them from giving you the disease. I mean, medically, we know that. So the lack of logic and ration has been stunning. I kid you not, Alex.
It's very much like a cult. John, I was thinking about this yesterday. It's cults that tell you, like, oh, don't talk to your family members if they're outside of the cult, or you don't want to have them over for dinner. Because, you know, they're worried about a little bit of reality, you know, cracking in through the bubble. And so they have to manipulate you using fear, using shame. They have to convince you that your family members are monsters and you shouldn't talk to them because they're not part of the in crowd. They haven't taken their vaccines. They're subhuman. This is really the tactics that we see in some of the most vicious cults. And also some of the rhetoric that we're seeing. When you look at the rhetoric that we've seen before genocides, you know, and a lot of people think that sounds extreme, and it is extreme. But if you look at the rhetoric that you see before genocides, there are some very striking parallels with the rhetoric we see right now from the fake media and even from some senior people in the political establishment about unvaccinated Americans, Americans who aren't appropriately panicked about the Omicron variant and these types of things. It's all very, very disturbing. And when you realize that, you know, I don't know how many people have bought into this narrative. I certainly don't think it's anything close to a majority. But when you realize that there are probably tens of millions of people caught up into this bubble, you realize we're also in a very dangerous situation right now. These people have become radicalized to the point where they're cutting off the parents who raised them and gave them life and loved them. They're cutting off siblings. They're cutting off lifelong friends. They've just been whipped into this frenzy and they're foaming at the mouth. It's a very dangerous situation, I think.
Yeah, very much so. Implementing this COP26, each country make sort of pledges. There's no enforcement mechanism at the international level, which of course had Greta Thunberg all upset. She's suddenly discovering that, yeah, she's a true believer, but the power, money, and control people have a different idea. But the countries have to do it, which means obviously when you come home, you're going to have to push this through a legislature, a parliament, a Congress. That hasn't been working out anyway. Even under the Paris Accord, it didn't work out. So why would this one do? But in the U.S., we seem all hot to trot on it.
Yes. And I think that's critical to understanding this, John. There was never any intention for third world kleptocrats and despots to actually do anything, right? They're just being bribed. They've got this, what they call the Green Climate Fund. It's a giant slush fund supposed to be filled with $100 billion per year from Western taxpayers, primarily Americans, Canadians, Western Europeans, Australians, and Japanese. And this needs to be understood really as a slush fund to bribe third world dictators and third world kleptocrats to play along with this. And we got some insight into how this works through WikiLeaks. It was very interesting. This was a decade ago now when WikiLeaks leaked all of those diplomatic cables from the State Department. And one of the things we learned was that the State Department, their agents, their bureaucrats were going around the world twisting arms of third world governments and offering them. It was basically the carrot and stick approach, very similar to what the cartels in Mexico do. They call it plomo o plata, right? Either you take lead or you take the money, the silver. And that's what these governments, especially the U.S. government under Obama and a lot of the Western European governments were doing. One that I looked into especially was what they were doing in the Maldives. I got to meet the president of the Maldives at one of these climate summits. I think it was in Copenhagen. And his name was Mohamed Nasheed. He ended up being imprisoned for terrorism charges in his home country. But he was whining at the UN summit about how his country was going to cease to exist because sea level was going to just drown all of his people and all this nonsense. And it was funny because I had recently talked to the UN's lead reviewer for sea level change, Dr. Niklas Axel-Morner, and he had been measuring sea levels in that part of the world for 50 years. He said there's no sea level rise there. If anything, the sea levels there are going down. There's absolutely no risk that these people are going to be sinking under the waves. And so I asked Mohamed Nasheed, like, hey, you know, even the UN's own scientists are saying that this stuff about the sea level and taking over your country is just absolute baloney. And he got real mad and huffy and puffy. And then the WikiLeaks cables came out, and we found out that the U.S. government and the European Union had offered his government billions of dollars in foreign aid to do stuff like build a new deep water port and, you know, all this silly money that they were just going to throw at this guy if the government there would play along with the climate charade. And so, you know, multiply that by another 150 countries and you get a sense of what's going on here. They are taking our tax money. They're using it to bribe these third world kleptocrats to keep their people in poverty. They're saying to them, hey, look, you know, play along with the climate scam. We'll send you a couple $1 billion. You know, you can put half of that in your Swiss bank accounts, get yourself a nicer limo, maybe hire some more guards for your palace, use the other $1 billion to make sure that your slaves never get any real electricity, you know, make them use solar panels and stuff, and we'll call it even. And in the meantime, we'll continue to deindustrialize our countries. We'll continue to drive the cost of energy up so that all our factories have to be moved to China. And hey, that'll be a great new world order by the time we're done. And that's really what's going on here. So there doesn't need to be an enforcement mechanism. The only people who are supposed to truly be put under pressure with this agenda to deindustrialize is the Western countries, especially the United States, because all that production is just moving over to China. And that was the plan.
It's interesting. And of course, we talked about that back in the 90s, that this was the plan. At the time, people weren't paying much attention. You know, we were puttering along quite well. We had the tech boom and then we had the stock market boom. That's why when you say, I hate to say I told you so, I go, oh, no, no, no. I've gotten to the point now after taking years and years and years of guff and nonsense from people. I have to remind you, yeah, we said it. We were right. You were wrong. And so in the future, you may want to listen to us instead of them.
Yeah. And you hope that's one of the lessons that comes out of this. Look at the people who've been warning you about these things for years or for decades or even for generations and say, wow, you guys got it all right. And you were mocked and you were ridiculed and you were demonized by the fake media. They called you conspiracy kooks. They called you all kinds of nasty names. And look who was right. I hope that will happen, but fortunately, Americans have a very short memory, a very short attention span. And I think what's equally likely, John, quite unfortunately, is that they'll prop up fraudulent leaders who are going to say, oh, we'll lead you to safety. And we'll get people like, very unfortunately, this governor in Virginia, right? People in Virginia got so upset they couldn't contain it anymore. So they put up a rhino, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, former head of the Carlyle Group, a key guy in shifting capital and technology and know-how over to communist China from the United States. And they said, look, here's your Republican other choice. And, you know, we all got excited. Yes, the Republican won. And, of course, we're getting the exact same thing. So I think that's one of the big things we have to guard against is phony Johnny-come-lately leaders coming to lead the conservative movement to victory, things like that, because that's what they do.
Okay. Any closing thoughts of things we haven't covered? Alex Newman, senior editor with The New American, there at thenewamerican.com. He's also author of Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes, came out in 2020. And anything else you want to let people know about?
Well, I want to thank you for having me on the program, John. It's always such a pleasure. I really appreciate what you do and hope people will have a great 2022. And I do hope people will start preparing. And as John and I both said, you know, look who told you these things were coming. And maybe pay attention, get the word out, and most importantly, get on your knees and pray, because we're in a big mess here. So thank you very much for having me on the program, John.
Sounds good, Alex. I had a flying instructor, retired highway patrol officer, and he was a terrific teacher. He ranks in one of the top five teachers I ever had. But he said, you know, if you ever let yourself get down to your last option, and he would sound just like this, you're in a bad way. Okay. He said, because if just one more thing goes wrong, you're done. And he said, never let yourself get down there. And I think that's what we're rushing towards right now. We're going to be in a bad way.
We sure are, John. But I want to thank you for all you've been doing to sound the alarm. And thank you for having me on the program to discuss.
And you'll have lots to write about, Alex.
Absolutely. There's right. Never a shortage.
All right. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you, sir. God bless you.
What we're seeing out here now, which is getting harder and harder for the elites to deny, is the end of about 50 or 60 years of the idea that we need global governance, and that in order to accomplish that, as Richard Gardner said in his article in Foreign Affairs, we have to do an end run around national sovereignty and erode it just bit by bit so people don't notice what's happening. In the school system, as early as the 40s, they were talking about training students to be global citizens. Then they had to bring that into fruition, and they did that through a whole series of international treaties, conferences, etc., just very much like the COP26 conference, which is held up to the public as being an environmental thing. But in reality, it's all about wealth transfer, erosion of sovereignty, all of these goals. That's just simply the vehicle that's on top. It used to be able to work for the mainline crowd to yell, well, that's conspiracy theory. Now, they keep trying it, but a lot of people have caught on, and they're not listening anymore to this. I mean, you'll even see articles, why people tend to believe in conspiracy theories when things get rough, you know, written by Dr. Alfred Snoozalot, PhD, University of Blabbero. And you'll see this type of stuff. The whole problem is there some kind of an agenda or a conspiracy out there? B, is it true? Yes, no. That's the thing you have to look at. There's a lot of nonsense. I keep saying that. But these have been pretty much well organized, and we keep drifting in the very same direction. Now, this is all coming home to roost. Only I'm not sure how much it's going to roost in the same way, and it's all going to come together. And the roosting may not be too fun. And I don't know. I can't actually tell you right now which of these factors will clip with the other one. I can only watch them in parallel. But let us always remind ourselves, countries and currencies and peoples come and go. God is always the same. And he understood that this time would be here. Whether we think it's the end times or not, he understood this. And so that's where your faith and your confidence is. Sometimes I think he laughs at the efforts of mankind to do the things that they do. They take themselves far too seriously. You know, every once in a while I get to thinking about things, which means, what do you mean I do the radio show without thinking? Of course, doesn't everybody else, right? The whole abuse of language that we see today, we are awash in an avalanche of lies pouring out at us from the political process and from academia, to be honest with you, and from the media. And they're just outright lies, although some of the best lies are actually those which are cloaked in shifty definitions, other games that you play with words, which we call semantics, and lies which are about 90-95% true, which demand a lot of thinking, whoever is going to take the time to figure out whether something is true or not. That's why God says, woe unto you who call evil good and good evil, and play all these word games, because he understands how these word games are played. Jesus understood that too when he confronted the Pharisees and the Sadducees, especially word traps, like perjury traps that are used by, well, we know who, don't we? And they're strictly word games. A lot of wokeism and a lot of what we're hearing in gender discussions and all of the other absolute insane nonsense that's coming out of academia nowadays is enabled simply because the English language does not make gender assignments to its words, with just a few exceptions. What the heck am I talking about? For those of you who don't remember your high school language class when you didn't want to be there anyway, everybody says, oh, I took Spanish in school, but I never really got along with it. But in English, we don't have gender words. The car. It's the car. It. That's it. Everything's an it unless something is very specifically feminine or masculine. Maybe one or two exceptions until recently. A ship is she. Yeah, we have a couple of those things, but generally the words don't have genders attached to them. Brace yourself for a shock, boys and girls. That is not true of any other Indo-European language that I know of. When you think of Italian, Portuguese, Espanol, Deutsch, Francais, Norwegian, Swedish, Russian, Polish, you can go on and on and on. They all have gender assignments to their words. English is the only exception that we drop that out. And so you can't even say the without knowing what the gender of the word is. And every word has a gender assignment. See, I'm looking at a window. In Spanish, it's la ventana. It's feminine. I don't know why. Why is a window feminine? I don't know why. The microphone, el micrófono, it's masculine. That's just the way it works. In German, it gets even better. You have three genders, masculine, feminine, and neuter. They managed to supersede what was going on in the Romance languages. What's my bottom line on the whole thing? Much of this wokus pocus that we're hearing nowadays is only made possible because of the flexibility of the English language. And when you see it being worked into other languages, it no work good. That's the best thing I can say. In the new version of West Side Story, Spielberg's put it out, I'm going to call it Woke Side Story, because it just had so much politically correct glop. I haven't seen it, but from what I've been reading about it. But what's really funny now is they're trying to come up with a generic term for Latino. And okay, we talk about the Puerto Ricans. You have to say either Puerto Riqueños, boys, or Puerto Riqueñas, girls. And when it's a combination of both in Spanish, you use the masculine. They're trying to come out with where you take the A or the O out and you make it an X. So Latino becomes Latinx. You choke on your glottis as you're trying to speak this. This doesn't work. And I've actually seen official documents where they try to translate that kind of wokus pocus that's in the document into Spanish. And believe me, sometimes it looks just downright stupid. And so a lot of what we're going through today is this playing with languages. Beware of it. Okay. The other thing that was really strange in the movie is Spielberg decided not to put English subtitles in for people who don't speak Spanish. So when the Puerto Ricanos can't say it, when the Puerto Ricanos are speaking Spanish, you can't understand it if you're not fluent in Spanish. None of this works. It just doesn't work. It's all artificial manipulation of reality, all by people claiming that they are the group that represents science. Yeah, right. And by the way, the Latino response to this is not very good to the new movie. It's bombing right now. And the Latinos have becoming much more upwardly mobile in the society, and they're becoming much more conservative, because they have seen a lot of the nonsense and how it affects their language. Victor Davis Hanson commented on that about all his friends, most of whom are Latino, living in the Central Valley of California, and they're tired of the nonsense too. Okay, do pray for us if you would, for provision and protection. Remember to pray for those suffering for their faith, especially in Nigeria, North Korea, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and places like parts of Egypt, etc. Africa is becoming a real trouble spot for persecution, and don't forget China. On behalf of producer Steve Schiller and our special programs producer, Kara Leffler, we're at steelonsteel.com. I'm John Leffler, and the program is Steel on Steel.
This has been Steel on Steel with John Leffler, an alternative information source for politics, religion, and global events. Steel on Steel is produced by Kara Leffler, engineered by Brad Grant. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the staff, management, owners, or advertisers of this radio station. Steel on Steel can be heard 24 hours a day on the internet at steelonsteel.com. CDs or online subscriptions support the ongoing program production. For more information, call toll-free 1-800-829-5646. That's 1-800-829-5646. This is the Steel on Steel Radio Consortium.